Welcome to the Astrology Hub podcast. I'm Amanda Pruell Walsh, founder of Astrology Hub and your host for our flagship show. We explore the many ways astrology can support you in your relationships, career, health, and personal growth. Thanks for tuning in. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Astrology Hub podcast. You have just joined a worldwide astrological conversation that's happening here every single week, featuring incredible astrologers like the one you're going to be hearing from today. I am joined today by astronomer and astrologer, teacher, incredible facilitator of astronomical and astrological mysteries, Gemini Brett. And today we're going to be covering the Venus cycle. So including Venus retrograde, including the fifth harmonic, including how to actually work with this Venus cycle to optimize certain areas of your life. So I can't wait to get into it. And just a little bit more about Brett. He won the 2020 Orion Award for outstanding contribution to astrology. He's been practicing and teaching astrology for over a decade. He's the founder of the Earth Astrology Astrology School. He's the president of NCGR San Francisco. He is a featured astrologer on our Astrologer Connect platform. He has taught several classes with us in the past. He's taught sacred astronomy for astrologers. He's also taught turning the wheel with annual perfection, planetary phases, and locational astrology. All of these are mastery classes that are available in our academy. He's also our next Inner Circle astrologer. So Inner Circle members, get excited. You're going to get a little sneak peek into the mastery class that he's going to be teaching with us on the fifth harmonic. And Brett, welcome back to the Astrology Hub podcast.
Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. We always love having you here. And let's just start off with this Venus retrograde. What is it? Why is there so much interest in it? Why do you think people are searching it and curious about Venus retrograde? Let's just start there.
Well, Venus does not retrograde that often compared to other planets. So it's unique. It's also Venus, who's the brightest being in our sky next to the moon and sun. And everyone loves love. And typically we project that onto Venus when we're looking for a planet to hold that signature, love and the arts and that, right? So typically during Venus retrograde, like, I think the most common thing we read is, old loves come back into your life. And that's like a generic. Like the love roller coaster came on the playlist recently. We took, Amanda, you're like a roller coaster legend around here, just so you know. We took Koa to roller coasters. And I was like, what are good roller coaster songs? We played Love Roller Coaster. And that'd, like, that'd be a good song for people to tune into, to just like feel that generally expressed Venus vibe. I think when we get into Venus retrograde for particular charts, of course, like all things astrology, we really want to know the natal chart. Like, this Venus retrograde is going to express itself differently for each of us. Yeah. But there's something with retrograde about, like, literally, apparently moving backwards through our zodiac. So there's that going back. Some people treat retrograde planets as more going within. But I think there's a huge piece of the Venus teachings that kind of are just coming back online now as astrologers are starting to engage with the living sky again. Because Venus retrograde means that Venus is disappearing as an evening star. She's been up there. I mean, you look west like we do at our house, and I'm sure you've just been seeing Venus every night and checking in, and you're done. It'll be like a year at this time that we're recording for Venus to return there. So importantly, just, you know, at all times when Venus is retrograde, this marks the time when she is transitioning from an evening star. Where according to traditional astrology, Venus is said to prefer the evening side. And then she goes into the fires of the sun and is reborn as a morning star during her retrograde cycle. So I think there's something crucial there when planets go into the light of the sun. There's a composting, there's a death and a rebirth.
So applying that to our lives, And I know you just gave the caveat that you would have to look at your own chart and understand where it's engaging with you personally. However, in terms of composting, what kinds of things would we be doing during a Venus retrograde phase?
Right. So to apply it just to everyone, right? What scar tissue marks your heart that could get released so you can open up to love's grace again, right? And make way to grow in love, to rise in love rather than just fall. The archetypal energy of these Venus retrograde periods, it's a really significant part of the Venus cycle, right? In the Venus star, which I imagine we'll talk about. I see it as the archetypal ascent of the global guidance, as I like to say. And there's something about that energy of connection and love, but all, you know, like all the love terms that we forget, because typically when we hear that word, we're thinking intimate, you know, mate love, and that's in there, right? But what about compassion and agape and love for all? And what about love for earth and beauty and, you know, embodiment, these things? So these retrograde periods in general give us an opportunity to look back. A Venus retrograde period probably asks us to, at least invites us to, if not implores us to, get back into some of the old wounds that would keep us from fully beaming love light.
Love that. So I know that the retrograde is just one aspect of Venus's cycle. So can you tell us about like the bigger picture of the movements that Venus makes in the sky and what each phase of these movements mean for us?
Sure. I'll give the short form of that. So it works differently for Venus and Mercury than it does for Mars, Jupiter, and beyond, because they, as like I like to call them, the interior decorators. Their orbital paths are between Earth's and the sun. So the way that we experience them in our sky is different than how we experience cycles of like sun and the stars, or sun and Mars, sun and Jupiter. That's kind of an important thing to know. Different than the moon as well. So Venus and Mercury, they do their own thing. And one thing they do share with moon, and something that Mars and Jupiter and Saturn could never do, is that Mercury and Venus can come between us and the sun. Right, just because their orbital paths are between Earth and the sun, right? They're like closer to the center of the chariot race, if you will, the great racetrack, and the center is the sun, and we're the third car out, right? Mercury's closest to the sun and Venus close to us in between, but they're not always in between us and the sun, right? Just because their paths are between us and the sun. Like, in fact, we'll speak about Venus when she's on the other side of the sun, as far as she gets, right? But like a new moon, right? Moon-sun conjunction is moon between Earth and sun, kind of like a seed moment, right? Like in that fire, in that light, like a new cycle begins. A new Venus, the way that most of us work with it, is Venus between Earth and the sun. And that's Venus retrograde. So this is another really important thing to know about the astronomy of retrogrades. This is true, by the way, for all planets. In the middle of a planet's retrograde period, that planet is closest to Earth. So for Mars and Jupiter, Saturn, beyond, this is happening because Earth is passing that planet on the racetrack, right? And those planets, like Mars, appears to retrograde just for the same reason that car moving really fast on the freeway appears to retrograde when you go screaming past because you drive like crazy woman or whatever. I don't know if that's true of you, but we've all had that experience when you pass a car on the highway and you know it's going forward, but it seems to go backwards, right? That's like Mars retrograde. Venus and Mercury, they retrograde for a different reason. It's kind of hard to explain with words, but basically a retrograde is a passing, and it's proximity. So if the way that the planets participate with our energy here on Earth has anything to do with their proximity, retrogrades could strengthen that, because it's literally like Venus retrograde conjunct sun is Venus passing Earth by. It's Venus at what we call perigee, G for geo, Earth, Venus closest to Earth. right? Middle of Mars retrograde, Earth is passing Mars. Earth is closest to Mars. Same thing for Jupiter, all the planets. That's a thing that I find is very rarely taught about retrogrades, which is a shame, right? Because, you know, like I was taught, for example, that when Santa comes around, you like leave some cookies and carrots and a wish list, right? But typically when people speak about planets retrograde, they just speak about it as like some hardship or something that's bad. And I guess it's a good time to just say, you know, what is your wish list for Venus right now? And what offerings, what are the cookies and carrots? What offerings will you leave?
Ooh, and you're saying that Venus is closest to Earth in the middle of her retrograde, correct?
Yeah.
We could like pinpoint a day or a couple days where that's true.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's easier to do these days with our software buttons and whatnot,
yes.
Right? Because the truth is, when Venus is passing Earth by, she disappears into the beams of the sun.
Yeah.
Her retrograde period lasts, well, we like to say 40 days and 40 nights, though it's typically more like 42.
Mm.
And it's not like the moment between when Venus disappears as an evening star, if you watch the sky as I do, and the time that she reappears. It's not necessarily the midpoint in time between that disappearance and reappearance. It's like so much amazing astronomy participates with that. In fact, in this current Venus retrograde here in August 2023, the observation ability, the observability, the ability to see Venus is greatly magnified in the southern hemisphere skies. And there's like all sorts of reasons, like we're not going to get into about that because I'll have to get all technical and nerdy. Folks who have taken my sacred astronomy class at Astrology Hub will see things like celestial latitude and straight and crooked signs and whatnot. But, you know, the oldest astronomy records of which we are aware come out of Babylon, and they're called the Venus Tablets of Amasaduqa, who was an old Babylonian king. She's Sumerian, I believe. And what they did, it's like, I think 20 years of recordings of when Venus disappears as an evening star and then reappears as a morning star. Mm-hmm. And that's not it. I'm going to get to what else is on that table in a second. But, you know, the old Mayan codexes that tracked Venus, same thing. When does Venus disappear as an evening star? When does Venus reappear as a morning star? And in the Venus Tablets of Amasaduqa, sometimes it's 2 days or 3 days. Sometimes it's 18. So depending on which sign she's performing this great rebirthing, composting and rebirthing miracle, and where on earth you're looking from, the time of Venus's retrograde disappearance will shift. All right. And let me speak really quickly about the astronomy, and then if you want, we can get a little bit into the myth. It also comes out of that land of the Middle East, the oldest story that we know of, at least that was written down or chiseled in tablets.
I'd also love to bookmark the idea of leaving Venus offerings and a wish list and just get your ideas of what kinds of things those could be. But we don't have to do that right now. Let's keep you on the same track you're on.
Yeah, that's fun. Maybe we should end there. All right, so Venus is an evening star, and then suddenly she's gone. And what happens is when Venus stations retrograde, she and the sun are moving in opposite directions in our zodiac. Right? So imagine the sun in Aries and Venus in Taurus. Right? The sun sets, Aries sets, and then Taurus sets afterwards. So after sunset, Venus is there in the western sky. Well, when Venus retrogrades, and actually even before she retrogrades for amazing reasons I don't think I'll detail either, the sun and Venus, like the space between them, gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. We call this the phase angle closes, okay? And your experience of this is Venus sunset after sunset after sunset. You go out to the west and Venus will be lower and lower towards the horizon, right? When Venus stations retrograde, and the reason why she does is she's passing Earth by. It doesn't happen in a moment, right? It's this kind of like 40-day period. And so as soon as that happens, she appears to hit the brakes, turn around, and then head retrograde. Then that phase angle between Sun and Venus closes rapidly. And it can be like a week and then she's just gone. Sometimes longer. It depends on the cycle. Depends on where on Earth you're looking from. And then she's between us and the sun, right? Like, and typically people are like, oh, it's like love and light, right? But there's this composting thing that I think is really often forgotten. And where we're looking at this on a chart, you just see a Venus glyph, the circle of spirit above the cross of matter. You see the sun, the circumpunct, and like they're together. When you go try to find Venus in the sky, you will burn your eyes and go blind, right? Because Venus is in the light of the sun. I mean, I should say importantly, with the advent of technology, and only twice in a human lifetime we've had ours, they were in 2004 and 2012, Venus can actually be observed visibly passing between Earth and the sun. It's called the Venus transit. Typically, that's not the case for the same reason that most new moons are not solar eclipses. Most new moons are not solar eclipses because depending on where on Earth you're looking from, the moon is either above the sun or below the sun, but so close to that beaming light that a new moon is a no moon. And this is true for Venus, Mercury as well. When they pass between Earth and the sun, typically they'll be above or below the sun from your point of view, and you just see nothing, right? But if after this time, and like my watch begins soon, you wake up before the sun and head to the east, you will see the rebirth of Venus, morning star, right? And many traditions, like literally viewed evening star Venus and morning star Venus as different beings. And, you know, I will say like most astronomers will teach that these old astronomers didn't even know that evening star Venus and morning star Venus were the same planet. I think that's ridiculous. Like if you've seen Venus when she's bright, it doesn't matter if she's on the morning side or the evening side, you know Venus is Venus. The truth is it's a different energetic. And I'll speak about that a bit more. I mean, just actually feel into your human experience. What is the difference when you wake up before the sun versus watching the sky get dark after the sun sets?
There's a sense of what's to, there's like a refreshed sense of what's to come. There's a looking forward. There's a hopefulness when you wake up before the sun and you see Venus out there. And then when you're watching her in the sunset or, you know, in the evening, it's a little more reflective to me. It's a little more, maybe even a little more peaceful, because it's just, there's a closure. That I'm just riffing based on how I experience it when I watch it, but I don't know if that's correct. I'm doing a little
quotation. What you experience is correct, right?
Yeah. Of course you would say that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And for me, this is how we want to learn about these cycles, go out and experience them. Right. And with Venus, who, again, next to moon and sun is the brightest being in our sky, Venus is the most often reported UFO.
Ah, wow.
Well, like without a doubt, she's just so bright and beaming. I mean, you've seen Venus when she's bright. It looks like there's eight like star points coming off her. Right?
It's like, or I think she's an airplane, or I mean, yes.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I mean, just in general, when we wake up before the sun, we're on the like, go get them and inspire to do something and create. And, you know, Dane Rajar, the great humanistic astrologer, said when Venus is a morning star, in other words, rising before sunrise, regardless of what sign Venus is in, you can just add Aries to it. Because there's this kind of like charge and like wanting to go. And I would say like this is the place of like fools rush in, if you will. Now, in the Mesoamerican traditions, like back in the day, this was often a time of war. And Venus was seen as a warrior. In this retrograde period, when Venus is reborn as a morning star, it's like this warrior is still covered in blood from that motion, like through the sun, right? And that this is Quetzalcoatl or Kukulcan in a different language, and not going to be there so much right now. But just importantly, like different traditions have seen Venus in very different ways over time. All right. So when Venus has, this is called her heliacal rise. when she is seen visibly rising before the sun, she's reborn, right? And then the sun rises and she's gone because, right, the dawn light just takes the sky from her eyes. But then the next day, she's still retrograde. She's further from the sun. The next day further, and the next day further, and the next day further. And this angle between the two of them quickly opens up. And the experience astronomically, if you're willing to wake up before the sun and go watch on the eastern horizon, is that Venus quickly climbs in the sky day by day, right? Until she's so far from the sun that she's just like maximally bright and beaming in that. Yeah. And there's this morning queen. Yeah. After that time, in a sense, energetically, it begins when Venus stations direct. And what this means astronomically is Venus is past Earth by now. Venus passes Earth every 583 days, basically 19 and a half months that we have Venus retrograde and Venus between us and the sun. And shortly afterwards, Venus reborn as a morning star, Venus climbing to her height. Yeah. And then after she finishes passing Earth in our mutual orbits around the racetrack, Venus appears to stop and then starts slowly moving forward, right? I mean, you're in reverse, you put it in park, you hit drive, you hit the gas, and it takes a little bit, right? Once her speed matches the speed of the sun, which is about 1 degree per day through the zodiac, then Venus is at what we call maximum elongation. And it's around this time when Venus will reach her like greatest altitude above the eastern horizon before the sun rises to take her from our eyes. There's a bunch of astronomical reasons why it's not precisely that day and yada, yada, yada. But basically, that's a trip. And then Venus slowly, she's about at that time, 46, 47, 48 degrees away from the sun. That's as far as she can get from the sun in our zodiac. She slowly starts chasing the sun down. And our experience of that, if you're waking up before sunrise day after day after day, is Venus will be lower and lower and lower in the sky. She slowly chases the sun until the point, it's about 9 months after her heliacal rise when she's reborn. Pretty interesting time when you think about the human experience in months, yeah. That Venus will then get so close to the sun that she's still rising before the sun. But she's rising and it's already dawn light and you just can't see her. So this is another version of what's called a heliacal set, Venus going into the beams of the sun. Now, in this case, Venus is literally going behind the sun from our point of view, or what they called in the ancient language, above the sun, superior to the sun. I'd like to say exterior kind of makes more sense. And it's a trip that the astrologers don't like. Write shady things about that time of the cycle, because now Venus can't be seen for like 2 to 3 months, depending on the cycle, depending on where on Earth you're looking from. In the middle of this thing, she will conjoin the sun again. So a unique thing about Mercury and Venus is they conjoin the sun twice in their cycles. One, when they're retrograde, that's between Earth and the sun, when they're passing us by. And again, when they're direct, and it's when they are on the opposite side of the light, farthest from Earth, which is called apogee. And they're flying in the zodiac, or so we think, but we really have no idea. We can't even prove that Venus or Mercury exist at that time in their cycle. Like, we've come to trust our experience. The sun sets and it rises again. You only need a day to prove that one. For the Venus cycle, every 19 and a half months, there's this disappearance, the setting as a morning star. And then later, 2 or 3 months later, she will reappear as an evening star. Right? But that's this time in this underworld, this faraway place. And it's a very different type, if you will, of a death and rebirth. And I think I'll come back to this, like, quickly talk a little bit of myth and add some like astrological energetics to it so people can play a little bit more at home and with the cycles. All right. Anyway, just to finish the astronomy, at that time, Venus behind the sun, she passes the sun by far enough that we can now see a separation between the two. That means the sun sets and we just see Venus on the western horizon. You're like, Venus? And then she sets. But then the next day, they're further apart. And the next day, they're further apart. And in the Western sky, Venus quickly climbs to her height. It's just like the crowned goddess of the evening. And then as she approaches Earth to pass us by 19 and a half months after she last did, then she begins getting lower and lower in the sky. She goes retrograde. She quickly dives into the beams of the sun. She sets as an evening star. She reappears about a week later as a morning star. And the whole thing begins again, right? So there's this amazing thing with Venus. Mercury, too. I mean, Mercury's harder to catch, the trickster. He's not nearly as bright, right? Venus, like, she's so bright. We often use this rule from Hellenistic astrology of 15 degrees on either side of the sun is this place called the beams. And you can see them when the sun sets and you see all the yellow and the red that, like, follows the sun and then it gets dark, right? Or before the sunrise, you see the beams rise up. Within 15 degrees, traditionally, it's treated that if a planet's that close to the sun, they're under the beams. You can't see them, right? Venus, 10 degrees is a better rule. And because of all sorts of astronomical awesome sauce, there's times where Venus actually can be seen as an evening star and a morning star on the same day. And I just want to put that out there because I was taught something very different than that, and Venus has taught me otherwise. And as I've then become a disciple of Venus and gone out to watch her so regularly, she's introduced me to Mercury, who does the same thing, but Mercury encodes pi and Venus encodes pentacles. And let's get back to that. But let me say one more thing here. We'll just say mythically, okay? So the oldest astronomical tables we're aware of, the Venus Tablet of Emesiduca. The oldest story, from what I understand, that we know of, at least one that was written, not just handed down, you know, word to word, is the descent of Inanna, queen of heaven and earth. And in the story, Inanna visits Enki, the wisdom god, who lives in the Abzu. And he breaks out the finest beer to welcome the arrival of Inanna, and they get pretty drunk. And in his, like, inebriation, Enki gives her all of these gifts. And she says, I take them, I take them. And the next day she sails off. Interestingly, she comes to the Abzu alone. She sails away with Ninshubur, who's described as the old queen of the East. And this would certainly be Mercury. And Enki wakes up the next day and he says to Ishmud, who's like his homie, he's like, hey, where's the Mies? Which is this term untranslated for all of these, like, holy adornments and other amazing things that he's given to Inanna. And Ishmud tells him so much. He's like, what? He's like, no, I wouldn't. He's like, dude, you were pretty trashed. He's like, oh my God, we got to get that stuff back. She'll totally understand, you know, just go and tell her, right? And so Ishmud goes and finds Inanna sailing away on this boat with Ninshubur. He's like, hey, you know, Father Enki was a little drunk last night. He gets this way when he's excited about company, and he didn't really mean to give you all that stuff that you got in the boat. We need kind of need it back. And she's like, no, like, Father Enki gave this to me. It's mine. And so he comes back and tells Enki's like, yeah, she's not giving the stuff back. And he's like, all right, send the monsters. So these monsters come after Venus, right? For me, Enki in the Abzu is the side of the sun facing the earth. And when Venus goes to see him, right, then she's reborn in the East with the old queen of the East. And as she's setting sail, what this is Venus's heliacal rise, but the monsters are she rises and then the sun rises and we can't see Venus. But the next day, and by the way, Ninshubur fends the monsters off. The next day they send badder monsters, you know, and the next day badder monsters. And like every time here, Venus is getting further from the sun, so climbing in the eastern sky, and like the monsters are like, less capable of tracking her down. Yeah. And eventually, like, she's made it all the way. This is like Venus bright. And Enki just gives her his blessing. Be a queen amongst men. Like, use those holy me in a good way. So much happens in the tablets then. And she finds her king and all these things. But the big piece here that I think we can work with is, for the sake of our time, is that she hears a call from the underworld, from the below. Her sister, Erishkigal, is the queen down there in a place called the Kur. And she sends her consciousness to the great below and feels the pain of her sister, who has just lost her husband, Gugulana, which means the bowl of heaven. And see, Inanna is just married to Muzid, who's a shepherd. And this is very likely one of the ancient stories that speaks about the transition from the age of Taurus to the age of Aries, from the bull to the shepherd and the ram, you see. But anyway, so she descends. On her way down, she has to remove these seven sacred adornments that she wears. And this is all keyed into the Venus cycle with the moon in ways I don't think we have time to describe right now. But basically, she disappears. This is Venus in the Kerr, in the underworld. And sadly, in the story, she's rewarded for visiting by being slain by her sister. And hung, pardon me, this is graphic, but hung on these meat hooks behind her throne. But before she went down, she told Ninshubar, she's like, hey, I'm going to the underworld. He's like, you know, that's heavy down there. And if you don't hear from me in a few days, like, don the clothes of the priestess, bang the drum in the temple of my father, Nana. And if he won't help you, bang that drum in the temple of Enki, of Enlil, and then in Enki. And Nana won't help, and Enlil won't help. I would say they can't help. But Enki sends, he creates these beings from the dirt of his fingernails. And he sends these beings, the Kugara and the Galatur, to go empathize with Ereshkigal, because he says, she'll be in pain when you're there. And when she says, oh, my hips, you say, oh, my hips. And when she says, my back, you say, oh, my back, right? And take her pain from her. And for this, she will reward you. And when she asks what you'd like in exchange, take the corpse from behind her throne and feed her this plant and this water of life. And this happens, and Inanna is revived in this way and then allowed to come back here. And as she does, she passes through the same seven gates that she passed through on the way down, reclaiming these seven sacred adornments, which very clearly correlate to the chakras. The seven chakras are energetic centers. And then amazingly, I mean, she's got to do it all over again. And while that doesn't happen in the story, it happens here on Earth because orbits. So there's so much of that wonderful tale that I've left out. But it's amazing to kind of track the Venus cycle with that tale. And I will say this, like the Venus retrograde period in that tale, there is a transformation, but I would say it's more like kind of like a Piscean transformation. It's like an ending and a beginning, and there's faith and there's understanding, but there's this willingness to go do it again. Like the Bodhisattva, right? Who said to achieve enlightenment, but comes back around until everyone does. You know, it's like, it's in that world. And this new energetic of Venus is born according to the sign that she aligns with the sun when retrograde. But then she's this bright morning star. 9 months, she disappears. She goes behind the sun for this long disappearance, this 2 to 3 months thing, which is much more like the scorpionic side of the cycle, right? So if we say like my Pisces and the retrograde transformations, Aries energy of rising before the sun and that kind of inspired, right? And then this descent and then kind of the scorpionic time of this death and rebirth far from Earth in a place we could never see back behind the sun and then reborn as the evening star. Rudyard said when Venus is an evening star, and you so beautifully described this with your experience of Venus, that you add Virgo, regardless of what sign she's in. Because there's this, you know, hesitation is the wrong word, but like reservation of patience, right? It's like, Aries, like, we're going to go get it with Virgo. We're going to kind of consider everything and then act. Do you know what I mean? And that's more of like the evening star. And she's an evening star for about 9 months, and then the whole thing goes down again.
What it's making me think of is that we are transformed in the process of the day. I mean, we wake up and we're one person, then we have these experiences and we go throughout our day. We literally are wiser, hopefully. But more experienced. And so, yes, there is a little bit more of that considered, I think, approach. If we were to treat each day as Venus's, you know, she has her morning experience and her evening experience, we were to like consolidate that into a day, we could reflect kind of those different kinds of qualities.
Yeah. But you have to like siesta, because there's a strange time, like in the middle of the day, if you will. The Venus cycle, it's different. Like you can kind of try to apply some of what we know about the waxing side and the waning side of the lunation with the new and the full moon in between, but it doesn't quite work. She never gets that far from the sun. She and Mercury, they just have their own trip, you know, and I can't agree with you more that, gosh, if we can, and sometimes we are like dialed in enough to really be in our soul work every day, you know, but usually we're not. And so the lunation's wonderful, right? Like I love that the inner circle practices with lunations, right? Because now you've got a month, but even a month, it's hard to stay dialed in month to month to month, right? So we get these other cycles. And while the 29 and a half year Saturn cycle might feel a little too long, it's something we want to work with. But so with the Venus, like the 19 and a half month cycle. And then in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, where I learned about this from Daniel Gemario, now the Turning of the Ages Mystery School, we work with the Moon-Venus conjunctions, the most beautiful thing you can see in the sky, as these times called the chakra gates or the moon gates. Actually, I have a table with all the dates of those conjunctions and significant parts of the current coming Leo-Gemini cycle, as I describe it, if you'd like to make that available to people, Amanda.
That'd be amazing. Yes. So check the show notes for that. We'll work on and making that for you. And if you want to download that, then check the show notes.
Yeah, right. I do it for every cycle. And I mean, there are just really brilliant times to get outside, see these Moon-Venus conjunctions. And if you choose to check that table, you'll see what's going on, especially if you compare it to charts and especially if you compare it to the sky and get outside and actually engage. The first gate is like the clearing of the crown chakra. And we work on that for a month. And just get the clutter out that stands between you and the divine. And the next month, we clear the third eye, like what's keeping my perceptions cloudy. And then the throat like that until you're all the way down to the root and you're clearing out fear. And now the vessel is just empty and there's this death and rebirth. And then on the evening star side with the Moon-Venus conjunctions, which start very low in the western horizon after she returns and then climb, you're kind of taking back, like when you released fear from the root on the way down. Now you're taking back groundedness, right? And when you know, just basically on the way down, emptying, on the way back, reclaiming. And you'll see that on the table. And I could speak about it all day. And that's what I was going to teach for the inner circle next month, this month. But I decided to change the flow because you've had a lot of wonderful astrologers teach Venus cycles in different ways over the years. And I thought I should probably give the folks something new.
Great. So we're going to be talking about the fifth harmonic.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's great about that? Well, first of all, what you just shared about that process of working with the VS cycle, I just love that cosmic curriculum. I mean, that's just Venus's curriculum. If you were to just pay attention to that in your astrological studies, that would be an incredible process of transformation that you would go through. Over and over, like you said, she chooses to go back down and come back up and go back down and come back up. But it is this opportunity for us to continue to reclaim these aspects of ourselves. I love it. Let's talk about the fifth harmonic quickly, because I know that that's going to be your mastery class teaching. But what is the fifth harmonic? Why does it matter? I love that you're bringing this in. I mentioned this before we went live. Clarissa Dolphin has been on our weekly weather quite a bit lately. So she's been bringing in harmonic and vibrational astrology into the conversation. I love this like deep dive opportunity on the fifth harmonic. Why'd you choose that? Why does it matter? Just give us a little bit of a foreshadowing on that.
Right. So I was going to teach Venus cycles and realized that that felt a little bit, I don't think exhausted is the right word, but whatever the right word is. I'm currently personally obsessed with harmonics. As you know, like I approach astrology through astronomy, but also through music, harmony, through geometry, through number magic. And the harmonics, like they're really named after the harmonic series in music. They have so much to do with all of these things that I love so much. And I'm really excited to like just share some of the kind of deep and awe-inspiring mysteries along the way. The challenge with teaching harmonics is they have not been studied long. Kepler, Johannes Kepler, right, the great astronomer, was maybe the first in the West to start playing with this idea of the quintile, which of course Rick Levine speaks about all the time, right? Which is just a fifth of the circle, or a biquintile, which is two fifths of the circle. So in astrology, we're typically not working with fives. We're working with fours and threes, right? And twos, polarity, triplicity, quadruplicity. And the fifth of a circle doesn't connect whole signs. This is one of the reasons. So I'll be speaking a bunch about this. But this relates to Venus in a couple of ways, which is why I was so inspired. One is that Venus comes between Earth and the Sun, as I said, about every 19 and a half months. From the Sun's point of view, Venus and Earth have five of these kisses over the course of eight Earth years, which are 13 Venus years. Right? Venus faster around the track. So Venus gets around the Sun 13 times in every eight Earth times. And in that process, they meet in this way five times, which is just beautiful. And it draws this like five-petaled rose, or in our zodiac, a pentacle, a five-pointed star over the course of these eight Earth years. And anyone who's played with sacred number will know that these numbers 5, 8, and 13 belong to the Fibonacci sequence, as we call it, which encodes the golden number phi and phi, which is in our bodies, all over the place, in nature, everywhere. And it's in the pentacle shape that, from Earth's point of view, Venus and Sun describe in our sky. So that kind of said, hey, go fifth harmonic. There's another thing that's happening. As you know, Jupiter and Saturn conjoined on December 21st, 2020. They planted a seed in the very first degree of tropical Aquarius. Jupiter and Saturn themselves conjoin about every 20 years. Like, that's a whole nother cycle, right? And in that course of a cycle, just like in a lunation, a moon-sun cycle, there's like a new moon, that's the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction. There's like a kind of waxing half moon when Jupiter squares Saturn, opening up. There's like a full moon when they oppose, right? But there's all these other frequencies that happen along the way. And at this time in this lunation, and actually for a while, Jupiter and Saturn will be quintile. So that's a fifth of the circle, 360-degree circle divided by five. Is 72 degrees. Yeah. And we found over time, although this is a frustrating thing, like, I think for this class, I'll probably take a book of what was once the bedside table and is now the bedside wall of like a library of books, as I've just been mad scientist, like frustratingly ripping through pages of so many texts, and like very few astrologers really speak about quintiles, and much less so about harmonic charts. And the ones who are sure of what it means all contradict, which of course is something in astrology that we just have to come to terms with. And it can be an exciting and inviting and beautiful thing. But the general consensus is that the fifth harmonic, which kind of ties these quintiles, these fifth of the circle together, this like star shape, and it does much more than that, which I will be explaining in the class. Like in the fifth harmonic, you can see the 10th, you can see the 15th, you can see the 20th, you can see the octaves of the five. And I'll be speaking musically and like letting people hear these things in the class too. But the general consensus is there's creativity. Some say creativity and play. Some say creation and destruction. Some see just like pure Venusian artistic talent. And Dali has like an amazing fifth harmonic chart, but some of my favorite artists just don't. And so that one kind of gets thrown out for me. But yeah, generally speaking, it's like there's an artistic play. I'll say one thing importantly from Charles Hervey is like, you know, just because we're talking about art, this doesn't necessarily mean sculpture or painting or playing saxophone on a stage. Like, this is the art of living. This is the art of debate, right? Like, it's going to come through in a lot of different ways, but there's something in like a talent orientation that hides in these fives and can be revealed and then investigated and like unfolded. when we explore the fifth harmonic. And we'll be at this time that I'm teaching this class under the spell of Jupiter quintile Saturn, and in Taurus, in Pisces, with the Leo Venus cycle. So that was the other thing. It was like, there's just art all over this place. Like when we were doing the forecast earlier this year, there was like a lot of hardship. And I'm like, wait a second. It's like this Pisces Saturn. It's this Taurus Jupiter. There's a lot of Venus in that. And that this Leo time of like a new Venus cycle, what about our creativity? What about living our life as art, which will be the theme for the Leo new moon that I'll be sharing. And then the class itself I'm calling A Love Supreme, which is a song and an album from the great saxophonist John Coltrane, who changed music. And he'll be one of the principal chart examples that I share in exploring the fifth harmonic.
Wow. Sounds incredible. Cannot wait for all of that. The inner circle is open right now. We're not in a promotional period, but if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my God, I need to be in that class. I need to be on that adventure with Brett. You can get in at full price. When we do our next promo period, which will be in October, you can adjust and get onto promotional pricing. So if you're just like, I got to do it now, go to astrologyhub.com/IC23. We'll put that link in the description. If you're like, oh, I love that. I love the idea of the inner circle. I'd like to be on these adventures with the different astrologers every month, but I'm not quite ready to do it right now. Make sure you get on the wait list, because then you'll be the first to know when we do open up to that promo period in October. So go to astrologyhub.com/innercirclewaitlist. If you just love the way that Brett translates the mysteries of both astronomy and astrology, and you just cannot get enough, please make sure and check out the different classes that he's taught with us. There is the astrolocality class that I talked about in the beginning. There's the foundational sacred astronomy for astrologers. There is the phases class that he taught with us, the perfections class. So he's done a lot with us. We've been working with Brett for years. And if you want to go check those out, you can at our academy. And or you can go in and look at the show notes and get the links or directly for those different classes and offerings. Brett, we promised to end with, if we were going to do some sort of ceremony, some acknowledgement of Venus as she gets closest to the Earth, we're giving her a wish list, but we're also providing an offering just like we do for Santa. What kinds of things would be, I don't want to use the word appropriate, because it's not like probably nothing's inappropriate, but what kinds of things would be aligned energetically with those kinds of ceremonial offerings for Venus?
Well, I mean, so again, it depends on the cycle. It depends on the chart if I really wanted to get into it. But most importantly, it just depends on you and your life, right? Like, I mean, I'm not speaking about something that's going on in my own home or anything, but like if you're addicted to some like video game and that's keeping you from experiencing like deep loving space with your partner, maybe you want to offer a video game and I won't play this for at least these 42 days of Venus retrograde so that I can reconnect, right? If you feel like, you know, you've been without love in your life and you want to bring that in, well, maybe look at the things that you have that you feel might be keeping you from going there. So, for example, you might simply be identifying yourself as somebody that's not going to have love in your life. Maybe some like bad astrologer told you when you were young, it's not happening for you. Like offer that, burn that, you know? I will tell you one of the most interesting things I've experienced in sessions is people who have been burned by love so many times that they got wise, right? So I'll speak with them. They're like, yeah, I used to believe in like love and roses. And then, you know, then I grew up. And it's like, oh, so what is love now? It's like a fairy tale. Or typically people that I'm speaking to aren't like that jaded. It's like learning to connect with the divine. It's in me. What did you used to think about love? And they say this really beautiful song. You know, it's like, well, that one kind of sounds like the wise one to me. Right. So maybe some of these burnings that we know, like we actually often hold on to them with like white knuckle grips because we know they grew us. Right. And we like love that some of the pain that we've experienced in our lives, whether in like, you know, intimate relationship or not, has been the source of like the evolution for the mystic. But that doesn't mean that you need to let that define your future as well. In fact, like the whole thing will be finished once you come back, right, to the field. I'd speak about this. I always see this scene from Indiana Jones when he's like running from whoever's chasing him, and he ends up like sliding a motorcycle through the library at the university where he teaches, and there's all these kids. He's like, if you want to be a good archaeologist, you got to get out of the library. And I feel like for those who feel like stuck in their like personal growth before they get back in relationship, because the more you grow, the more your future love will grow, right? Like, but you can be in that mindset forever. At some point, you just got to get back in the field, get out of the library. So I think it's very personal. People hearing this will be in different places. If this is a Capricorn cycle, I'm going to personally tend toward different callings than I would in a Leo cycle. If it's a Leo cycle for a Gemini rising chart, I'll treat it differently than I would for an Aquarius rising chart, right? And so like it's the time to also get on Astrologer Connect and link up and do some Venus sessions. Sheridan Semple, that's there. Learned from the same teacher I did around cycles. Like she'd be a great person to connect with. I'd be a great person to connect with in that. And I can just show you the cycle to which you were born, where you were born in the cycle, which of the chakra moon gates you're working with and all that. But in general, I would say like, look at what's keeping you from more love and offer that, like burn that, right? And see the rich soil that becomes of that burning through the seeds of new love and new radiance and new light to lead your way through life.
So good. Okay. So Brett's available for readings at astrologyhub.com/connect. Sheridan Semple, who we just mentioned, is available for reading. So again, if you want to dive deeper into what this Venus cycle means for you, like Brett said, which gate you're working on currently, where those offerings could be, where the gifts could be for you, check them both out on Astrologer Connect. Andrea Michelle, I also believe she works a lot with the Venus cycle. So you could book a reading with her too. But they're available for readings of various lengths, so 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, depending on how deep you want to go. It's an incredible service. We have floods of testimonials that come in from your readings, Brett. I love reading them. People literally come out transformed after having a reading with you. So thank you for your continued service on that platform. And I'm just super excited to be spending this next lunar cycle with you in the inner circle. And thank you for sharing so much. I mean, I've learned so much just from this one podcast episode. And this is how it is, spending time with Brett. Sometimes I get to spend time with him in person and we just sit. I just listen and he's teaching me all these amazing things, which I remember a fraction of. But then every time I learn from him, I get a little bit more and a little bit more. So don't, if you're feeling like, oh my God, where did we just go? And I don't even know what just happened. It's okay. You're getting it on some level. And as you continue to tune in, you'll just absorb more and more. And it just amazes me, Brett, how you can remember the names and the myths and the details of the mathematics of the cycles. And it's astounding. I love these opportunities to just have a moment in your brain, in your mind, in the way that you think, and in your heart, because that always comes through in the way that you teach and facilitate astrology and astronomy for all of us. So thank you for that.
That's my great honor, and I will receive that. I appreciate your reflections. And of course, I always learn from you. And I guess I'll retrograde to where we began. You're like this roller coaster legend around here. And I think go listen to Love Roller Coaster by, I think it's Ohio Players, right? And so the play, there's another reason. So the fifth harmonic's often associated with play. We're coming into a Leo lunation, a Leo Venus cycle. In fact, what I call a Leo Gemini cycle, because Venus will be between us and the sun in Leo and then opposite the sun in Gemini. And there's just so much play there. So that also inspired the fifth harmonic. And most of us, I think, when we hear love roller coaster, you're like, oh my gosh, because you just go up and down and it's crazy and you have no control and you're just on the tracks of madness and just put your hands up and scream. But you know, that song's talking about like, you're amazing and it feels like a roller coaster. So that's why I think that's like a good assignment for everyone to go listen to. The Ohio Players Love Roller Coaster coming out of this, and don't do it passively. Get up and boogie.
Backstory on the roller coaster thing. My daughters are 14 and 11, and they had never been on a roller coaster. They'd never been to an amusement park. So this summer, we went to California. Anna, Brett's partner and one of my dearest friends, and you probably know her here as the chief marketing officer at Astrology Hub, Anna and Poa, her son, joined us at Six Flags Great America. And the girl, Sophia, Madeline, and I, like, took fun so seriously that day. I mean, we had a game plan for how we were going to attack the park and make sure we did every single ride and had enough time to do the rides again. And it was the most fun day. I mean, it was like off the charts fun. We rode so many roller coasters. And Koa, who is only seven, was so brave and courageous. And he, like, it took him a while, but eventually he was riding the big scary roller coasters with us. And it was epic. It was one of those days that we'll never forget. So that's the little backstory why Brett's saying I'm the roller coaster queen. I hope
Koa, who's now eight, and by the way, Venus in the sun have an 8-year cycle. And importantly, Earth, Venus, and the sun. So on his 8th solar return, I took him outside after sunset and I showed him evening star Venus and said, this is what Venus was doing when you were born. I'll turn 48 in October, my 6th, 8th. And I go outside and receive Venus's light. So, and that's another thing to know about the Venus cycles. If you're turning 8, 16, 32, 48, I skipped 40. Any multiple of 8, like, you're in a very important Venus cycle time. So anyway, I went on some rides with Koa and it was like, dude, I don't know about this one. We're up on these giant swings. He's like, you have a bomb? I'm like, not really. You know, and we come down. I was like, I was a little scared. He's like, Auntie Pua wouldn't have been. Auntie Pua is so brave. She'll go any ride, right? So you're this roller coaster legend here. And by the way, that's probably in that really strong Moon Mars midheaven figure in your fifth harmonic chart. Let's leave that there and look back into it together sometime.
Love it. Okay. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for making up our community that is Astrology Hub. So happy to share these. We always like to think of when Brett comes on, we had a show at one point called Storytelling, but it is. It's always storytelling when we get to hang out with Brett. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for being a part of our community. And thank you, as always, for making Venus and astrology and astronomy a part of your life. So grateful that you're here. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Oh, I love that. Take care, everybody.
This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community and for making astrology a part of your life. This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community and for making astrology a part of your life.